My name is Bob Ottenhoff, and I'm the president and CEO of the Center for Disaster Philanthropy, based here in Washington, D.C., and I'm going to be joined on this presentation with Marion O'Neill, who is the manager of corporate contributions for PSE&G, the energy company based in New Jersey. So things we want to do today on this webinar is one, take a look at some of the history of the state of disaster philanthropy. What have been some of the trends in the last few years? Where are the dollars going and so forth? We're going to talk a little bit about what we can do better or what we can do differently with our current practices around disaster philanthropy. We're going to take some time to learn what PSE&G did during Sandy and how that has helped to shape its current approach to disaster response and preparation. We'll think a little bit about what you can do as a next step, and then we hope you'll have lots of questions that Marion and I can answer for you. Now, when I talk about disasters, the first reaction for a lot of people is, you know, that happens somewhere else. It just isn't going to happen to me. And so I like to show this slide here. This is for the year 2012, and there were 11 billion-dollar weather and climate disasters in the United States. Worldwide, there were 44 billion-dollar disasters. We all know about Sandy. That occurred in October of 2012. I happened to be, and maybe you were too, in the derecho that occurred in early July of that year. But just take a look at some of the other ones. We had tornadoes in the southeast, the Ohio Valley. We had a Hurricane Isaac on the Gulf Coast. We had tornadoes in a number of different countries, different states throughout the country. We had the wildfires in the West. And so this is now becoming a pretty typical experience here in the United States. We have more disasters, more weather-related disasters, and they're happening with more intensity. And so this is part of the new normal. Disasters almost by definition are out of the ordinary, but we're now beginning to see that they're quite ordinary, quite frequent in what we do. In other words, while disasters may shock us, they shouldn't surprise us. They will happen, and philanthropy will be called upon to respond. So given the inevitability of disasters, it's imperative for funders to make use of their dollars in the most effective and most effective ways possible. So the good news about the response to disasters is that Americans respond generously. As you can see from these statistics, there have been billions of dollars which have been voluntarily donated to respond to a number of disasters over the last decade. And I'm always amazed at the incredible generosity of American corporations and American citizens to disasters that are occurring in this country and throughout the world. But now the not-so-good news about disaster philanthropy. It tends to be uncoordinated, meaning we all kind of do whatever we want to do. It most certainly is reactive. Our statistics see that about 90% of all dollars are given within 90 days of a disaster. So we tend to respond only when we've seen something on television or we're involved with something that may be closer to home. And as a result of this reactive nature, they tend to be underfunded, meaning that once the surge has occurred, there isn't always the dollars necessary to build back, to restore areas, to get a community functioning once again. Another factor in this reactive nature is we tend to then forget about disasters. Once the TV cameras have gone away, we tend to move on to other parts of our lives, forgetting that there still may be homeless people, that their schools may not be functioning, that there's still a lot of work to be done. And then finally, because it's forgotten, because it's so reactive, we tend not to chronicle best practices, experiences, things we can learn among each other to make sure that we do it a little better the next time. So that brings us to why the center was created. What we want to try to do is really transform the field of disaster philanthropy by increasing donor effectiveness throughout the full life cycle of disasters. And this is a term I'll be using a lot throughout this webinar, the full life cycle of disasters. And we'll get into that a little bit more as we continue here. We do three things. One is we get very involved in educating and informing. So we're really delighted to be part of this webinar today so that we can share with you information, so we can begin to be that repository of information about what's going on and what can be done better. We also help donors to collaborate, to try to break out of those silos so that donors can work together, so that they can increase their impact. And then finally, we get involved with individual foundations and corporations who want to work on their own strategies. So this term, the emergence of the full life cycle, most activities of corporations, foundations, donors, individuals is really focused on that emergency response and relief part of the life cycle. And we think this is so important and so necessary, but it's not all that is required. Here's a chart that kind of shows the entire life cycle. And this is one of the things we want to talk about some more today. There's the preparedness part. What can we do to better prepare our corporations, our foundations, our communities, so that they can bounce back quicker, so that they can not have the disastrous impact from a disaster, that can lessen that a little bit. You know, as I was planning for this, it seems to me that's something that you all in your energy companies are starting to think about much more than perhaps you did in the past, is how can we better prepare? How can we come up with plans? How can we come up with responses for our employees? How can we get our small businesses back to work and our schools functioning again so much better by being prepared? The other parts of the life cycle are resilience, building communities that are more resilient, that have social capital, thinking of ways for mitigation. We've certainly heard since Superstorm Sandy, governors and mayors in New Jersey and New York starting to think about where their facilities are located, where bridges and tunnels are located, and starting to think about risk reduction and mitigation. And then finally, after the disaster, there's the whole effort to build back better, to make sure that after we've responded to a disaster, when we build it back, when we build back the houses, there's a thought about the kinds of disasters that have hit, or there's greater sensitivity to what the next disaster could bring and how we can respond to it better. So all of this is designed to help make disaster philanthropy less reactive and more strategic, and more strategic throughout all of the areas of the life cycle of a disaster. So in an effort to try to learn more about what's going on right now, the Center for Disaster Philanthropy teamed up with the Foundation Center, and we issued our first report last November, and it's available on our website. And this was a report that looked at 1,000 of the largest U.S. foundations. We looked at all grants above $10,000 or more. And our estimation is this represents maybe half of all total giving by all U.S. foundations in 2012 to disaster philanthropy. And just to put this in context, this first report did not include the contributions of corporations, and it also did not include the contributions of individuals. But our sense is this represents maybe a third or so of all disaster giving that occurred in 2012. But we wanted to focus on this group first because we assumed that with the largest U.S. foundations, we were getting those who most likely had the resources in terms of staff and ability to do research that of all samples among foundations, they would be the ones who would be most likely to have giving that was more intentional, that was researched, that had a plan behind it. So what we found was that there was a total giving of about $111 million among this sample, and it represented about 884 grants. And by the way, we'll have a new report that will come out sometime later in the end of 2015, and it will include all U.S. foundations, so the big ones and the small ones, and it'll also, we hope, include all of the corporate gifts that went to disaster philanthropy in 2013. And so of this $111 million, we found that the majority of disaster grant making was for natural disasters. This next chart gives you a little better idea of that. 58% went to natural disasters, 2% to man-made accidents. So this could be an oil spill or a train crash or something like that. And then 11% went to complex humanitarian emergencies. So these could be a pandemic like Ebola or maybe a refugee issue or something that is more slow to evolve. So of the natural disasters, you can see here a breakdown. 10% were geophysical, so this would include earthquakes, volcanoes, and so forth. 56%, over half, were to the storms of tornadoes and hurricanes. And you can see a breakdown of the rest of those. Interestingly to us, about 46%, nearly half of all dollars donated by foundation, these large foundations, was to response and relief. And only 10% went into resilience, risk reduction, and mitigation, and even less, 4%, into preparedness. So we're, this is an issue that we're now talking to foundations about. I was with a foundation last week in California that now is trying to devote a third of all of its dollars to planning and preparedness, a third to response, and then a third to reconstruction and recovery. So different foundations have different approaches to this. But at this point, we're just beginning to do the research and analysis to begin to think about how can we be more strategic, more intentional in our giving, and less reactive, doing something just for the sake of doing something, and trying to be more thoughtful, more intentional in the work we do. So at this point, we want to turn over the microphone to Marion O'Neill, who's been thinking a lot about these issues, about emergency preparedness and response in her position at Public Service Electric and Gas. So Marion, welcome, and we're looking forward to hearing your comments.
Thank you, Bob, and thank you all for having me. I work in New Jersey, or we are headquartered in Newark, New Jersey, but we are a utility company, both gas and electric, as well as a power company with plants in Connecticut, Albany, and actually in Hawaii as well. And we have nuclear facilities in Dalham County, which means that Delaware is part of the emergency evacuation zone. And most recently, we now manage LIPA, Long Island Electric Territory. So that is who we are. And our vision, and I wanted to put this here because you'll see that our vision, and this has been around for many, many years prior to Irene and Sandy, but it includes safety. And since I came to the Corporate Responsibility Department from Public Affairs, I've always wanted to ramp up. In fact, we didn't really have safety funding. And for me, it started with the St. Barnabas Burn Center. I thought that we should be giving more than $5,000 a year to a center where, you know, when something happens and, our men are in an accident, that's usually where they go. And I just thought they should have the best possible facilities. But as I started going down this road and then post-Irene and then post-Sandy, the corporation agreed and made, safety one of the tenets of our giving. So we have four giving areas: STEM education, community, focusing on greening communities, volunteerism, and safety. And we define that as strengthening safety systems and building resilience within our communities. So prior to Sandy, we did give to some, as I said, we did give to the Burn Center, we did give to the American Red Cross, but we didn't give a lot of money, and it wasn't very focused money. And what was interesting, though, is the first thing we realized during Sandy was, even though we had been steady givers to the American Red Cross for many years, when our operating people asked, you know, hey, where is the American Red Cross setting up a tent? Or, you know, Salvation Army, are they doing any sheltering? Because we didn't want to duplicate efforts. You know, we wanted to make sure we were leveraging our resources. And we couldn't find them on the ground. You know, I worked with, it was like talking heads, you know. We were in the headquarters, and I'm talking to people in the American Red Cross, New Jersey headquarters, and nobody was able to contact people on the ground because it becomes like a military operation. People were brought in from other states and all kinds of volunteers. So we had a really hard time, and it was a lesson that we learned, a hard lesson that we learned. So the first thing we did, or I got to do post-Sandy, was I went and met with the people in the company who actually are charged with safety, you know, whether it's, you know, on the gas side, electric side, or power side. And, you know, we got together, and I reached out to our, you know, what I'll call, you know, VOAD, volunteer organizations, active in disasters. And we thought that maybe what we should do is get to know each other. So the state police were kind enough to allow us to meet at the ROC, which is the Regional Operations and Intelligence Center, so we could all go and actually see where the presidents of our companies and the heads of our nonprofits go, you know, in a disaster. So, I'm not at my desk, and I'm having a problem signing back on. In any event, so we went down to the ROC, and we had gas, electric, communications, gas, like communications and water companies there, as many as we could get. And we had all of, like, the American Red Cross, Salvation Army, Community Food Bank, and those kind of nonprofits there as well. And we all spoke about how we triage, you know, and it was like a 10-minute, you know, up, you're up and you're down. And then we all networked and got to know each other. And we've continued this, by the way, like, we've continued these relationships. I also asked if we could be part of the corporate you know, the daily phone calls or twice daily phone calls that we have during a disaster. And the VOAD the VOAD organizations also have a daily phone call. So this way we are included in both. And what was interesting during Sandy was we found some of those VOADs were actually giving us information off the ground, like the Bergen County Volunteer Center. And they were actually really helpful to us, you know, but it was very piecemeal. So in any event, we learned that communications is important and knowing each other is really important, you know, and we've kept that up now so that we are both part of each other's communication strategy if something should happen. And as I alluded to, I have started to work very, very closely with operations, listening to them and funding things that are important to them. So, for instance, we are, like many utilities and power companies, we are a company of first responders. So why aren't we funding the, you know, fire safety convention and having a presence there? Why aren't we at the emergency responders convention also having a presence there? And that's what we started to do, was actually show up and present at these conferences, really get to network. And then we also provided an opportunity for the VOAD organizations, because we had a better relationship with these people. We managed to get them in so that they would be part of that same community. So, and we've continued to work with operations. You know, I'm going to talk about the Sesame Street program a little bit later. And, you know, I always reach out to the operating people when I want feedback on whether it's a webinar or whatever piece it might be. You know, how are our first responders going to respond to this? And then we also started funding effective VOADs. So, you know, I'm proud that now we help fund and establish the statewide VOAD, which we didn't have. And they're going really strong, and they're going to have their first conference this year, and we'll have a presence there. But we also went a little bit deeper and said, okay, we want to start at the statewide level, and then let's work down. So now we found one of the most effective county VOADs, and we're working with them to say, okay, what are you doing right, and how can we make this work in the county or two that we you know, we want to identify that needs some strengthening. So we can't do it all, so we're kind of saying let's work, you know, at a broad level and then work down. And I should mention that we also fund, Bob started a playbook for disasters, and through our Council of New Jersey Grantmakers, and I think there's probably two of you that are in that kind of organization that's in the room. So we work through them because we knew that, like, Nina Stack for the Council of New Jersey Grantmakers is a strong believer in Bob's work. And, you know, we wanted to make sure that we, you know, we have a playbook here in New Jersey. So, you know, that's something else that we decided that we should fund, so we're not, you know, reinventing the wheel every time we have disaster. Next slide. All right, so one of the things, one of the problems we had being kind of all over the place was, you know, we can fund American Red Crosses and we can do all this stuff in each state, but how do we start to change mindset and how do we do it in a, in a uniform manner? And so we teamed up with Sesame Street, which I have to tell you was an awful lot of fun, going into New York City and working with their team. And we said, let's get something that, you know, it's going to resonate, it's going to, you know, get some attention and resonate no matter where we do business. So we went to them and we said, you know, it's kind of young, you know, 2 to 5, 6-year-olds is who the audience we're targeting. But we also know they're the audience that really can't read. So we're going to have to rely on their parents, their caregivers, whether they be senior citizens or, you know, preschools, to help us and, you know, get that word out and help families, you know, start to think more in terms of, you know, preparing for and knowing how to respond to disasters. And as Bob also mentioned, you know, the whole life cycle of a disaster, utilities are typically involved in the first two, which is being prepared and immediate response. You know, once the lights are back on or gas is back on, we're out of there. You know, we may, you know, match our employee gifts to, you know, long-term efforts, but that's not a space that we tend to fund. So we want to be in those first two spaces. And we also agree with Bob, we don't think there's enough done up front. And more done up front, you know, if the lights do go out and the power's out, our customers are at least better prepared to deal with that. So next slide. Okay, so the let's get ready is about being prepared. And what we did was work with them to create something that is, you know, English and Spanish, and it's ready to be printed. In fact, it's available to anybody, so you don't have to depend on us to print out any of these pieces, and you're welcome to go in and see them as well. So, I mean, the Family Resource Guide, the Educator Guide, and the Community Host Guide are all basically the same, but they're just geared to a different caregiver. So the Family Resource Guide is about families sitting down and, you know, working with their children to, you know, prepare for an emergency and helping them, you know, pack a kit for themselves, you know, their own bag, and helping them understand if something happens, you know, where they're going to be and what they're going to do. And what was interesting for our senior management was they're accustomed to more dealing with safety education in terms of our products. And this was at a very basic level. It really was about mindset and not necessarily about our products. So that was a little bit of a different take for us, the utility company. And then we also worked with them to create an app, which you can go in and download. I will warn you, it's a little bit large. So if you download it, you want to take a look at it, and then I would delete it. But it is a lot of fun. It's got cute songs on it, and it's, you know, kind of encourages you to take a picture of your child in front of the house and show that on there, and they should know their mother's name and father's name, their real names, not mom and dad. So it's really very basic, but it's you know, but it is about making sure that families are prepared, and that's kind of a fun thing, and that's a fun app that was fun to actually work with them and create. And then on the next slide, on the emergency response components, even though this is about responding, we are encouraging people to go in advance, because the whole point of this is that, you know, when something happens, whether, you know, you're forced to evacuate your home or a tree falls on your house or, you know, your whole, it's frightening for a child to see, you know, their whole street flooded, you know, helping parents understand what their children's emotions are and how to deal with those emotions is really critical. And so that's exactly what these things do. They help families and the community partners, which are really those grassroots organizations, who are the ones out in the street when things happen, helping them understand how children respond to disasters and how to help them through those. We also have, they call them family comfort moments, but they're really videos, you know, with Muppet segments, and we try to show different relationships, like Big Bird and his grandmother and Elmo and his dad and Rosita and her mom. And they're cute little, you know, video, and you can go in and see them at your leisure. And, you know, they're just cute little videos about, you know, children who are afraid of sirens. When they hear sirens, what does it mean? Or the power is out. So, you know, what can they do when the power's out? So, and in addition to these components, we also, they develop webinars with us, which I can share with you. It's the YouTube, but it's by invitation only. So happy to send the link if you want to look at any of them. And these webinars are, we'll be rolling them out to employees because they'll tell employees, you know, how to bring this program to their local community. We even had one developed for our public affairs people who are critical to success as well, you know, how to roll it out, you know, to your local town. And we will have, like, walk-arounds, which, you know, like, it's like a large Muppet that walks around, and we have a number of opportunities to bring them to kind of major events or events we think are critical, you know, to have a presence there, you know, have an employee there with an iPad to show, you know, to show the program, and a Muppet there to take pictures. And we also have lots of posters and those big pull-up posters that are portable that we can bring to local events as well. So essentially that's what we've done with Sesame Street, and we've using various means to get that word out, which is a whole different story, but critical as well. And then, you know, to conclude, the next slide, okay, you know, as I mentioned as well, we're looking now for, you know, deeper and broader applications. So, for instance, one of the things we're doing is with operations, we're looking at forming an employee resource group of first responders. As you probably experience, it's very difficult to communicate with, you know, our field people, you know. And so how can we do that? Well, if we have an emergency responder employee group, you know, we'll have a SharePoint site. It's something they can access after hours. You know, it's a way of identifying who they are and finding out if they want training. And, you know, the corporation also puts a little money behind its employee resource group. So that's kind of a next big step for us. In fact, we have a call on, I think it's Wednesday, to understand, you know, employee resource groups. And there's also different iterations of those, from what I understand, and how we might want to develop that with, you know, the staff, the operating staff at PSEG. So, I mean, essentially, that's what we've been doing. I'm really proud of our work. I think we've made a difference, and we've done other things as well, but this is the main area, and I think we've been recognized throughout the state for it, and I know our own employees have been grateful, so it's been fun. It's been really fun as a funder to be able to fund something so close to our operations and to, you know, to our employees.
Marion, thank you so much. We've been listening to Marion O'Neill from PSE&G, and you'll have a chance in just a moment to ask her a few questions as follow-up. So one of the things we're asked the most frequently, I think, is what can you do? How do I get started? So we just heard from Marion with a very ambitious, very successful plan that her company has initiated. And what I liked about is that she talked a lot about getting employees involved in making it kind of a company-wide campaign. But she also talked about getting emergency responders involved and starting to connect in more deeper and profound ways with the community at large. So that's one way to do it, is to start your own campaign, your own internal efforts with some goals of touching to your employees and to the community at large. A second approach that we see is to bring in someone to help you design a plan. And this is what you do with communications. This is what you do with some of your capital campaigns, but to bring in someone who then can help to design a campaign for you. And then the third approach that we're seeing increasingly is from corporations or grant-making organizations that want to outsource a certain type of their activity because they know it's not central to the activities they get engaged in. We're working with a foundation right now that wants to focus on the disaster communities 3 to 12 months after a disaster has occurred. But it's really not a very major part of their grant-making activities. And so they're finding ways to find others to manage that program while they concentrate their activities on others. The other approach we're starting to see across the country is groups of corporations or foundations joining together to come up with a collaborative plan. Marion mentioned the work of the New Jersey Council of Grantmakers, your own regional grant-making organizations. We're seeing this in California and Florida, where grantmakers have gotten together to try to come up with some common goals where they can collaborate and work with a community. But at that, let's stop our talking and get a chance to answer questions that you might have. And while we're getting organized to ask those questions, let me start with one just to get the ball rolling here. And Marion, I'd like to learn a little bit more about your thinking around the word resilience. You talked about in your presentation about you wanted to help build a more resilient community. What were you thinking about when you said that? And what are some of the things that you've done to build a more resilient community?
Well, starting with the VOADS, I think that's key. VOADS and our operations department. And so for instance, that's where we want to work with Janet Sharma, who's with the Volunteer Center of Bergen County, to say, okay, what are you doing well, and which towns are really strong, and which aren't, and why? And, you know, how do we help those communities where we really see, you know, there's certain communities that, you know, are, I don't know, disaster after disaster just seem to have problems. And some of it is just their location, their bodies of water, whatever it might be. But how can we help them so that, you know, we know the power is most likely going to go out there or has a higher chance of that? How do we help them, you know, get there and get prepared? So, you know, drilling down at the county and then the local level is our objective with respect to being prepared. I mean, ultimately, if I had, you know, all the money in the world, I would work with institutions like NJIT, New Jersey Institute of Technology. And they're doing a lot of work in resilient buildings. I mean, that would be a dream. I don't know that we're ever going to have the resources for that. But, I mean, that's ideally where we really want to be. But right now, I think if we can get each community to a point where they're ready and each family understanding their own responsibility to being ready, we would be in good shape.
Jennifer, Marion and I are ready to answer your questions. Do you want to take it from here?
Okay, I've unmuted you. So if anyone has a question they'd like to start with?
Marion, hey, this is Darren Dodson. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. So my question is your work with the VOADS, as far as from a mitigation or a recovery in the communities, is the VOAD the lead agency, or is PSEG? And then the other question that goes with that is how invested is the community in developing the resiliency versus looking for a handout?
The first question, who's the lead? I mean, truthfully, the OEM is the lead, right? Because, you know, disasters they've called at the state level. So the OEM is the lead.
Oh, Office of Emergency.
Yeah. Right. No, I understand that.
Okay. But I know we need the VOADS to be the lead. We're not the lead. We need to know what's going on, and we need to have a very strong relationship with them, which is why, you know, that's one of the things that we're working at, you know, as you heard. But that needs to drill down even further. But they are the lead. And I would say we're not funding at the town level. And have I had organizations submit grants to me? To your point, you know, just looking for funding, yeah, you know, tailoring, kind of making a round peg fit into a square hole. We've found that, but not for the most part, you know. That hasn't been a problem for us, you know. I've had individual organizations, like certain types of communities, try to express this, whether they be, you know, seniors or, you know, disabled. You know, I have had certain types of communities approach us for funding, and I think we will be there eventually, but we're not there yet. But we haven't had a trouble at the town level. And actually, one of the things we've also been working on is with the New Jersey Tree Foundation. We're working in identified counties to hold sessions with them about right tree, right location. And we do that in conjunction with our operating staff, and we've had a really good response to that. But we make it clear that we fund the New Jersey Tree Foundation, and they hold the session. We'll ask them hold it in this county because we see it as a county that needs some help. Because to your point, if we went and funded the county to do it, it would end up being, I don't think it would be as effective. So we like to fund through the nonprofit organization.
Marion, this is Helen Humphreys. Can you talk a little bit more about the VOAD? And when you say VOAD, are you referring to a group of organizations that you're working with, I'm assuming, like Red Cross and maybe first responders and
churches.
The churches.
Yeah.
And so you said that you had pulled them together, I think you had indicated there was a meeting early on where you pulled together folks from different corporations, but also from those volunteer organizations. Can you say more about how you work with them? I know that's such a broad question, but how organized is that effort when there's not an emergency going on? And then how effective do you think that work you've done with them in advance of an emergency has been? I don't think maybe it hasn't been tested yet, or maybe it has.
I mean, you're right. Will we know how effective it is until something happens? Probably not. But the organizations we worked with we didn't have a statewide VOAD. And so when Sandy hit, the Community Food Bank of New Jersey had very generously allowed one of their staff members to take this role, actually a number of years ago. How I met up with her was when I was trying to get the American Red Cross on the ground, I couldn't. And I just called anybody I could find, and somebody had said, try Kathy McCann at the Community Food Bank. Well, 8:30 at night, Kathy McCann called me back, and that was my first introduction to her. She's still with the Community Food Bank, but now, you know, one of her efforts for many years was to have a statewide VOAD, and now New Jersey 211 has taken that role, and they are establishing a statewide VOAD with its own 501c3. What I found is most of these organizations know each other, so it was really a matter of me getting to know them. For the most part, it's the state police, the communications, Sergeant Joe Galletta, Kathy McCann with the food bank, several people from the American Red Cross, Steve Spinner, Mike Prasad, Salvation Army's Brenda Beaver. I know I'm missing a few people. Oh, the Governor's Office on Volunteerism. There's a core group, and we have somebody from FEMA, too. There's a core group, I'd say, of less than 10 people that really are active in this space and committed to it. Now, there's others underneath. As you point out, there are many very solid church groups, more local groups, who they are very well aware of. I'm not as close to them. I know some of them. But the core group are those really the statewide groups that are, some of them are charged via legislation, right, to this is their call. I think the American Red Cross and Salvation Army are actually in those regulations. But they're the core group that, you know, are involved. And then I deal with them. I do get requests from others, and I usually go back to them and get a sense of, you know, how impactful are they in the community. So, for instance, I got a call from somebody who's actually in the disabled space, and they're looking to have a drill for the disabled somewhere in the middle part of New Jersey. Apparently, this has only been done in Alaska. We think that's a great idea because, we would want our emergency responders to know how to deal with, you know, the disabled. They don't all go to the hospital, you know. Maybe there are certain things that need to be at certain places. But I will go back to our core group and say, what do you think of this? I also go back to our operating people and say, what do you think of this? But it is a core group of people statewide, and I would say you probably find that in most states, or at least most regions of the state. I know some of you are a lot bigger than we are, but that's who our core group has been. And we actually meet now. We meet occasionally. You know, I supported when NJVOAD came and said we're doing our first conference. I didn't hesitate to say we're supporting it, you know, financially as well as, you know, we threw some tickets in to one of our boxes so that they can raffle and raise some money. So I don't know if that answers your question. But they actually know people nationally, too.
Yeah, this is Bob. Let me just add a couple of things. Our experience is that VOADs, when done well, can be incredibly effective in bringing communities together, certainly of all the nonprofit organizations, but then acting as a interface with the philanthropic community and with various government agencies. Unfortunately, not all VOADs are created equal. And so what we've learned over the years is that there's quite a variation in terms of capacity and capabilities. And so one of the things where I think you all could be very helpful would be to be in touch with your VOADs to do your own assessment of their capabilities and capacities, and maybe find that as one of the contributions you could make to a stronger community. Because when done well, a VOAD can be just a terrific resource of bringing a community together. And by the way, there's a national VOAD conference of all of the VOADs, and there's some 75 or so, but there's a national conference of all the VOADs that takes place in early May in New Orleans. If you're interested, let me know and I can give you more details.
And I'm glad you all are sharing this. I mean, I'm going to confess, I've never heard of a VOAD. I don't know if anybody else.
I had to look it up on my phone.
Only one of us. And there needed the emergency response. So that's good information. I just wonder offhand, do you know, is there a VOAD in West Virginia?
Yes.
There is?
Yeah.
Great.
In Pennsylvania?
Yeah, there's one in all states.
And how much would the sort of infrastructure vary from state to state? We have members of organizations here whose operations span both Pennsylvania and West Virginia, obviously. Yeah. So would that infrastructure look very different between the two states?
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about that, Robert, and what kind of, you had said it's not consistent, not all VOADs are created equally, but is there a well-defined structure that is supposed to be applied to a VOAD? Is it created by the state or the federal government?
It's not created by the federal government, and usually is not created by the state government either. It's an effort to coordinate the work of first responders. And first responders who are nonprofit organizations and faith-based organizations. So the concept is if there's enough warning, let's say there's a hurricane which gives you enough time to plan, they would try to get together several days before to share what their plans were. You know, the Salvation Army is going to do this. The Red Cross is going to put up shelters here. We've got so many beds available. There's this kind of food available. Here's how many days we're planning to be there. So it's an idea to kind of share plans and share resources. So that's how it works in an emergency setup. What you hope they can do is when there isn't a disaster, they can begin to share data about how many people they have, what kind of resources they have, and more importantly, to then begin to connect to FEMA on a regular basis, to connect to state emergency officials, to connect to corporations like yours that are also first responders. So it really begins to integrate all of the those who are going to be engaged before, during, and after disasters. Where I think sometimes it works the best is when there's an executive director of this organization or someone who can take charge. It works less well when you're doing it by committee. It works less well when you've got a rapid turnover of nonprofit leaders so that you lack the kind of continuity and the kind of communications. So it sounds like, Marion, that's what you've tried to do is build up the capacities of your VOAD a little bit so you've got more consistency, more depth, more integration with all of the various players.
And you're right, Bob. And if I could, interestingly enough, many of the people, not say many, but a few of the people in the company who are charged with, you know, safety and emergency preparedness were very, very critical of the American Red Cross after Sandy. And they didn't do a great job either, by the way. And part of that was because they were reorganizing, and part of that was because of their reorganization, they had shut down certain offices, which really angered those local communities. So, and when we were getting ready to fund them and have discussions, I did invite that those operating people to the meeting so that they could discuss, like, you know, we'd all have a better understanding of what, you know, what's expected, and, you know, let's keep on top of the change. And then we also asked a senior person to go on their board, both in Long Island and in New Jersey, so that we could better monitor and have, you know, closer, you know, really feel the pulse of what's going on there and if the change is really effective or ineffective. And then the other thing, and Bob, you can speak more specifically to this than I can, but isn't there, every state has an emergency plan, and is it Section 6, or I'm not using the right terminology, in that area it actually charges the American Red Cross with shelter, and it charges the Salvation Army with feeding, if I'm correct. So they are actually in, and there is a place at your, you know, at that rock, so to speak, for those organizations, so that, you know, they are supposed to be interfacing at high levels. What we found, and where we agreed with our operating staff, was they were not effective initially at that local level. So, you know, they've made a lot of changes, and you're right. We won't know for sure until the next disaster, but I will say they're very, very responsive now.
I just have one comment, and I just want to offer, Marin, I loved your partnership with Sesame Street. I thought that was really a clever way to brand your efforts, and what a great way. I just am curious of the great PR or the branding to tie yourself with that group in the schools. I'm just curious, you know, looking for some feedback. Was that successful for you? Do you think that was worth it? I'm sure that was not an inexpensive venture, but it sure seemed like a great way to reach the kids, and what a great idea.
It actually has been received really well, and it was not inexpensive, but we chose to do an awful lot. Like, there's even more to the program than I'm saying here. But it was like a $1.3 million program over 3 years. But if you are interested even in seeing, first off, you're able to use any of these materials. But if you wanted to see how there's something, even if it's a smaller item, that you wanted to develop with them, I'm happy to provide you the contact information so that you could have a call or sit down and go through other opportunities they may have. I mean, we didn't take advantage of every way to communicate it or all the kinds of material that could be developed. But it's interesting. The president of the utility company actually decided he would foot the bill to do a video moment with Elmo. So that was kind of fun to watch him talk to Elmo. And now we're using our sponsorships, like with NJTV, to air that. You know, so and we also we try other ways to get it out there. But happy to talk with anyone of you specifically or want me to put you in touch with them. Happy to do that.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions? All right, Bob, thank you. And Marion, thank you very much. We really appreciate it. I think it doesn't seem like there are any more questions right now, but certainly we can share contact information if anyone has specific questions or would like to talk more in detail about something specific that you heard today. So I guess with that, we can log off, and we'll be in touch soon then, Bob.
Great. Well, thank you so much for the opportunity, and best of wishes to all of you in your important work on this subject. And Marion, thanks again to you for participating. We really appreciated having you with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good luck, Bob.